Imagine a life where you can spend according to your values, give generously, love richly, live intentionally, and handle your finances biblically. That's what the Faith and Finance podcast is all about. I'm your host, Adrienne Hildebrand, and on the Faith and Finance podcast, we discuss personal finance, intentional living, and value-aligned spending by sharing inspiring stories and practical topics to help you steward your finances in a way that honors God and builds your faith and wealth for the present and generations to come. Let's get started. Hey, hey, welcome back to the Faith and Finance podcast. Today I have a super cool guest. His name is Andrew Kerr, and we're going to talk about something that I think is fascinating and that I would love to do, actually, but it's called house hacking. And no, this does not mean like hacking up houses. All I can think of when I say the word hack is, number one, Fred from YouTube all those years ago. And two, I think hack like chainsaw, like hacking people. I don't know why my brain goes there, but that is not what this is. So I'm really excited for you guys to hear from Andrew today. He started off in mortgage banking, but then he was like, I hate this, and sort of went on this journey to find himself and to figure out, you know, his calling in life, basically, and figure out kind of what's going on in his life. And through some twists and turns, which we talk about in this episode too, it pushed him toward his destiny, really. And also, we're talking about house hacking, which is, actually, I'm just going to let him explain what house hacking is, but it's really cool. And it's a super cool way to supplement your income and also to make your house payment potentially be nothing or very little. So I'm really excited for you guys to hear from Andrew today. All of today's links that we talk about, anywhere you can connect with Andrew, are going to be in the show notes. So you can find the full episode show notes at my website or by clicking the link down below. So I'm excited for today's episode. Let's hear from our sponsors really quick. Hey, Andrew, welcome to the Faith and Finance podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited about it and to be able to chat with you today.
I am so excited that you're here. So, Andrew, I have already given you a formal introduction to the audience, and I'm sure they are so excited to hear about you and kind of what you're about. So please tell us just in your words a little bit about yourself and your money story.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I took this very non-traditional route. I was the kid in middle school and high school that if I liked my classes, I got an A. And if I didn't like my classes, I got a D. I knew I was smart enough to know the exact amount of work I had to do to pass a test and to pass a class. But I was so lazy where I wasn't going to try anymore past that. So it gave my parents a lot of gray hairs early on. But that's who I was. I was this. If I liked it, I was interested. I went full in. And then if I didn't like it, I did just enough to get by. And that caused me to not go the traditional route of finish high school, you go on to college and do a four-year degree. So what ended up happening is just as I was turning 19, I started working for a guy in the mortgage industry that had his own mortgage company as a telemarketer. I know, one of those horrible telemarketers. And what ended up happening was I generated so many leads for him. He said, you should go over and do the sales side, be a loan officer, start doing lending, doing small commercial lending, residential lending, you'll make a lot of money. And to me, that just sounded amazing. So here I was at 20 years old, making really great money, had already bought my first home. All my friends were still in college or just getting out of college with all this debt. And I thought I was on the fast track for life. At that time, I was making really good money, but I was spending every single dime that I had. You know, when you're 20 and sometimes even your 30s and 40s, you don't know how to budget, spend money. The idea of saving money, sometimes we don't even realize it. There in my early 20s, I essentially spent every single dollar that I had and spent a little bit more, even though I was making great money. And it took me sort of my late 20s and early 30s to sort of fix all the mistakes I made in my early 20s. So it was this really sort of interesting period of my life where I didn't go to college, went to the mortgage industry, did really well, had this big life change where I ended up in the nonprofit sector where I've now been for about 11 years. So really sort of interesting way that I navigated through life.
Don't feel bad about being unconventional, because I've kind of been unconventional myself. So I think it's funny that you just, the thing you started with was, I basically did whatever the minimum was to pass a class, because that's so me. Like, I'm like that. But it's so cool that we all just kind of have different ways of doing things. And I was just having a conversation. This is a little bit random, but I was having a conversation with a friend just yesterday, and I said, you know what? Like, you can get an A in a class and still not learn anything. I'm to the point in my life where I'm like, I'm okay with getting a B if I've actually learned something in my class. I'm just now finishing my bachelor's degree, not even because I feel like it's necessary, but just for what I'm doing, but just because I wanted to and I could pay cash for it. So I totally can understand where you're coming from there. So you got into the mortgage business with someone you knew, with a friend, and then you started making really good money and kind of moving into different roles within the mortgage company and things like that. But you noted to me, and I'm, again, maybe getting a little off topic, but you noted to me that, well, even just now, you said, I actually went into the nonprofit sector. So what was kind of that impetus? Like, why did you decide to change and go into the nonprofit sector after, you know, making really good money so young and doing all that kind of stuff?
Oh, you're really getting into my life story now. You're asking some good questions. So I'll try to sum it up and not make it run on for hours and hours. But I was, you know, I worked for other people for several years, and then I just got to this point where I was working with a friend, and him and I were usually one of the top five salespeople in the company where we were working for. And we just said, you know, why are we giving 30% or 40% of the money we're bringing in to someone else? You know, I had been on essentially from 19 till when I switched over to the nonprofit sector, I guess 26, 27, I was essentially on 100% commission. So this idea of a boss who asked me to do all this reporting, who I was making all this money for, I said, you know, this doesn't make sense. So I went to my friend and I said, you know, let's go open our own mortgage company. This is easy to do. You know, we've got enough experience. We've got some money that we can put towards it. So here I was, already on my own house. I was dating someone who I was getting pretty serious with at that time. I thought we might get married someday. I own my own company. And here I am in my mid-20s, and I just realized, is this going to be my life for the next 30 to 40 years? You know, I was making great money, but I really wasn't that happy. You know, after about a year and a half, 2 years, my business partner and I weren't getting along. We were amazing friends. We were both really hard workers, but our values just didn't line up. We also had slightly different work ethics. We also had different directions of where we wanted the company to go. And at the same time, the woman I was dating, we ended up breaking up. So it was just these multiple different things happening. And this was also, you know, leading into 2008. And I'm sure as everyone knows what happened in 2008, you know, stock market crashed, housing market crashed. The life was just changing in multiple different fronts. And I just had this period where it literally was like, I'm making great money, but life sucks. I'm just not happy. And that's really what caused this change. And I had a friend that asked me to go volunteer with her one summer, and that really just turned into this broader story. You know, it was 4th of July of 2008. And what you typically do is you go do the beach vacation and you go drink all week and have excess. And she said, I'm going to go volunteer doing disaster response work in Iowa. And it was so different from everything else that I was doing in my life. I said, this is amazing. I'm going. I would probably never do it, but I just need something different. And that 1 week turned into 2 weeks, turned into a month, turned into 4 months, and transitioned into working in the nonprofit sector.
That's incredible, Andrew, that, you know, I always am very introspective, and I think about the little thing, the seemingly small things that ended up literally changing the course of my life. And I think that's sort of what happened to you. It literally took you to say, wow, I'm actually really not happy. I'm making good money. But then a friend kind of maybe casually saying, hey, I'm going, I'm doing this thing and I'm volunteering. And that just like changed your life. You know, all these seemingly little
things that happen throughout our lives, Andrew, it's so cool to say, to look back and say, that was literally the impetus that pushed me to my destiny, kind of, and like what I'm doing now. And so I think it's so cool that you shared that, because I think sometimes we get stuck in ruts in life, and we don't understand why we're going through things, or why we're seeing things, or why we're being where we're at in a certain place in our life. And for you to say, literally, this friend that I had was like, I'm doing this thing, and you just were like all in. Like, that's so crazy to me that in your mind, you just were like, I'm doing this thing. Like, can you talk a little bit about how you were feeling during that thing? Because it's not, I guess you maybe did just pick up and go, but how were you feeling? Like, what really made you say, like, to your friend, I want to do that, other than your life was really stinking? Like, was there something just kind of like pulling you to that? Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the funny part is that friend, we had actually met through mutual friends, and they set us up to go on a couple dates. And then after, I think it was like 2 dates or 3 dates, we're like, yeah, no, you're really cool, and I want to spend more time with you, but the dating thing just doesn't work. So oddly enough, I think we had known each other 2, 3, 4 months at that point, started off sort of dating. And then after a couple of dates, we're like, yeah, let's just be friends. And she proposed this idea of, you know, Andrew, I know life just isn't where you want it right now. Why go do your typical thing? There's this great organization. They have this model where if you go, you pay to get yourself there, and then they put you up, and you and return work 8, 10, 12 hours a day volunteering, doing disaster response work. So that idea was just something I thought was really unique. It was this friend that really just blossomed into this cool relationship, where she had a very different viewpoint than I did on life. And it was just building in this strong friendship. And then the idea was, well, let's not fly out there. Let's drive. And the place we were going was Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I'd never been to Iowa, never done a cross-country road trip across the Midwest and see the cornfields and the Field of Dream out in Iowa. It was one of these things that was so different, where it made me just say, okay, I got to do something different. And then when we got there, we were sleeping on air mattresses in the church's multi-purpose room and their extra, you know, classrooms. And then we would go out and clean out flooded basements. And I just remember I was bone tired, like sore in every single muscle that I had at the end of the day. And all day long, we were cleaning out flooded homes. And some of these homes in these basements were nasty. I mean, we smelled bad. We were dirty and muddy. And, you know, the end of the day would come and we'd all sit around and get cleaned up and have dinner. The church ladies would come and make us casseroles for dinner. And it just, life felt good. I felt like I had a purpose. I felt I was using my hands, using my muscle, my body. I was sore, and you just came at the end of it. And it was this, the weekend did, we went back home and life just felt good. It was like, hey, I had a purpose here. I don't back home. And then oddly enough, after that sort of week, when we went back home, I was talking to my dad's friend who had retired 6 months earlier, and he had cabin fever. And he was just going stir crazy. And he goes, you know, your dad told me about that volunteer thing you were doing. If you ever want to do that again, let me know. I'll go with you. So sure enough, I said, well, I've got more vacation time. You want to go back next week? And went back again and volunteered with him for about a week and a half, 2 weeks. And that was when I realized I was meeting such cool people from all across the U.S. I was helping a community. I felt like I had this really good purpose. I said, all right, I'm going to quit my job. My lease was about up on my apartment anyways, moved stuff into storage, and I went back and stayed on as a volunteer for, in total, 4 months out there in Iowa with this national nonprofit doing disaster response work. So it was literally just something so different, and I felt like there was meaning to my life. There's something that was having purpose, and I was having a lot of fun doing it.
That's just so cool. I mean, that you literally picked up your life. I mean, you were still had your job because you had vacation time, but that you just kind of picked up your life and started doing that. So that is a great kind of point to sort of pivot a little bit in this conversation, because now you're obviously kind of in the personal finance space. You are into, you know, financial independence and real estate and all of that. So at what point, when you kind of realized that life maybe wasn't just about making money and just about going to work every day, like at what point did you start, you know, learning about financial independence and real estate and those kind of things? When did that kind of happen for you?
It was a couple of years after that where, you know, I was single when I was in the nonprofit sector. And oddly enough, when I was volunteering out there, I had actually met the woman who is now my wife. But when I was volunteering, you know, I went from being a volunteer to getting a stipend of $800 a month. And then my starting salary with that nonprofit that ended up hiring me, you know, was $2,000 a month. So I went from essentially a six-figure job to $2,000 a month with the nonprofit. And while I was still single and young and traveling all over the US and around the world, you know, that was fine. But there was a couple years after that where I said, you know, I really love this nonprofit work, but it's not going to give me the lifestyle that I want, the financial security that I want. So I went to a couple friends that I knew that were further along in life in their late 30s and 40s and 50s. And I just said, can I take you to lunch or to coffee and just ask you questions about your life, ask you questions about your business? You know, I talk to entrepreneurs, other real estate developers. I talk with financial advisors and sort of looked at other potential career options or ways I could make money on the side and build a financial future so I could still do the nonprofit work. And, you know, I was talking with this one guy, Jim, who went, him and I were really, really close. And he just said, Andrew, you know, you've been doing this real estate thing where you bought a house at 20, you have all these contacts of insurance agents, appraisals, realtors. If you want to delve into that more, and at that point I had bought a second property and was doing this thing that's now called house hacking. If you want to dive into that, you should go talk with this other guy, Bill, and his wife, Sarah, who we all knew. And this guy was at that time in his late 80s. We were all part of a civic club together. And I just sort of said, you know, why do I want to talk with Bill? He's a retired scientist who used to work for the EPA. And he goes, well, Andrew, you do realize Bill and his wife own about 100 rental properties. So I called him up and he just said, Andrew, why don't you come up to the country club? Sarah and I will take you to lunch, plan for 2 or 3 hours, and we'll just tell you our story and tell you about real estate investing and why it was so good. And they literally sat me down and said, here's how we started in the 70s. Here's what we did in the 80s. Here's what we did in the 90s, in 2000. If you want to set yourself up financially, we did all this real estate investing while we both had full-time jobs. You can do this as well. And this will let you do the nonprofit work. And that was really how I got started in the real estate investing space and in that personal financial space. I still make financial mistakes now and have made them over the past decade. But that's really what drove me on the real estate side is it still let me use my hands. It let me make good money and I could do it very part-time while dedicating the majority of my time to the nonprofit work. So long story short, that's how I sort of delved into the real estate investing, personal finance side of things.
That's such a great story because you make a point that you just started asking people about their lives. And I think sometimes we overcomplicate processes like that. And we think, oh, I could never do that. But you've never even talked to someone that has, you know, and people are more than happy to kind of share their stories and share their information.
Absolutely.
And I think that's so great that you just were like, I'm just going to go ask people. Like, you know, I think we overcomplicate things sometimes. And there are complicated processes and things that happen as far as, you know, real estate, you have to do it right or it could be complicated, right? Yep. But if you're just talking to people and asking them, just being curious and just asking questions, people are more than happy to share that information. So I love that you were like, literally, I just started asking people, you know, I think we think people have this like crazy, cool story of how they did the, and it's like a lot of times people just figured it out or found people that knew how to do those things. So I love Absolutely. That part of your story.
You touched on the right thing is curiosity. I'm a big believer in folks like to help out other people. And also people like to talk about themselves. So if you have a general, like real curiosity about someone and you're asking for help, every person I reached to at that point, they said, oh, Andrew, yeah, I'd love to help you out. And I'd love to tell you my story. I just had this real general curiosity about their story where I found it fascinating. I learned about them and things that their life that I never knew about. So then we got closer. Yeah, it was just, it was this phenomenal point where if you actually go out and ask folks and take an interest in their life, they tend to take an interest in your life and really like to help you out.
That's right. And I think you make a good point too, that these, a lot of these people were people you knew. So you weren't just finding these random people online necessarily, like people that you don't know. So you made a good point that if you're investing in other people, and you're genuinely curious and interested about their lives, people are, they want to share that with you too. So, for anyone listening, if you're wanting to learn anything in life, whether that be about personal finance or house hacking, which we're going to ask Andrew about specifically in a second, or how to pay off debt. Like, if you're just showing a genuine interest in someone else, more than likely they're going to want to share with you as well. And that's part of the reason why I started this podcast, because people were just interested in what I was doing. And I was like, well, this is just an easier way to do it. So Andrew, you mentioned the term house hacking, which I think house hacking is brilliant. It's one of my favorite things ever. We don't do it, but I'm trying to get my husband to like totally like do it. So talk a little bit about what house hacking is and how you were house hacking at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one thing I do want to do is a sort of a shameless plug for Rotary. It's a civic club. It's sort of like the Lions or Kiwanis. Those folks that I went to go ask and talk with were actually part of the local Rotary civic club that I joined. So these are folks that I had known and been eating lunch with, you know, multiple times a month for years. And I just built a close relationship with them because we'd all go out and volunteer as a civic club together. So if you have any interest in giving back and building a network in your community, I'd say check out a Rotary club. I've been part of a Rotary club for 14 years, and it's been instrumental in shaping who I am in my 20s and 30s.
I'm definitely going to make note of that and put it in the show notes, because I think most towns, most cities or somewhere close has a Rotary club, so, or something similar. So that's a great little tip of how to learn and meet people and build relationships.
Yeah. All right. So now to your question of house hacking. So I think that now the real definition of using your housing to bring some other financial benefit to you, you know, and I sort of look at, there's sort of six styles of house hacking where you're buying a house and you're renting out the extra rooms or just getting roommates. You're buying a property that you can convert where it's maybe an unfinished basement, or you can add in a mother-in-law suite and finish it out. So now you have this additional space on its own you can rent out, or you have a accessory dwelling unit where you've got a detached garage where you can build an apartment above it. You can do a long-term or live-in flip, or basically you flip a property and you fix it up while you live in it over a period of a year, year and a half. You have work provided housing. And then the sort of big popular one is you buy like a small multifamily place, like a duplex or a triplex, and you live in one unit and then you rent out the others, and it offsets some or all of your housing costs. I mean, that's the sort of broad definition of house hacking. If you go Google what is house hacking, there's a million articles all about it. But what I did at, you know, 20 years old when I bought my house, I essentially was going to go live with a friend and we were going to rent a place together. And it was something like we could rent a place for $700, $800, $900, $1,000 a month. And being in early in the mortgage industry, I said, well, wait a minute. You know, I would go rent a place for $800 to $1,000 a month. I could go buy a place, get a low, no down payment loan, and I would have a mortgage payment about the same. And then I could just rent out, my friend could rent the room from me, and that would cut my housing costs in half or make it about the same if we were renting. So that's what I did at 20 years old. I bought an N-unit townhouse, partly because I was 20 and I was lazy, and my chores growing up were cutting the lawn, and I had no desire to do any sort of lawn care or landscaping. So I bought a townhouse, and then the model I bought was a master downstairs, which usually the older folks, retired folks like that. And then upstairs was two bedrooms. And I said, well, I'm going to buy it. I'm going to live downstairs. And then my roommate can live upstairs. He'll have one bedroom. And then the other bedroom, he can make his living room. And now we're only sharing the kitchen. and it worked out great. So that was sort of the first house hack I did. And then the second house hack was while I was doing this disaster response work. You know, I would leave on a Tuesday and get back 3 months later because I would be off in Indonesia or Philippines or Haiti or in the US. And I tried renting some apartments at the time. I had since sold that first house I bought at 20. But I realized, hey, I'm going to waste money if I'm renting a place and I'm gone 80, 90% of the time. And I was getting tired of living with family or friends. So I found this 4-bedroom, 4-bathroom condo, and each of the doors locked. It was over by a university. So what I did is I said, great, I'm going to buy this. I'll live in one room and rent out the other rooms. And I think I was getting a little over $1,000 a month for the other 3 bedrooms. I had the utilities in my name and my mortgage payment was something like $600 or $700 a month. So it essentially let me reduce my housing cost to nothing. And I was able to pocket a little bit of money. And then when I moved out of that, I turned it into a long-term rental. So, and that's the sort of broad overview of what house hacking is. It's really just thinking creatively about your housing and then making a little different choice to reduce one of your biggest expenses in your budget, which for most people, that is your housing costs. And there's all those different ways to do it. You can do it with families. My wife and I are living in our third house hack, and we just bought our fourth house hack together, or my fourth house hack, first, second house hack. And we've bought a lot of other real estate and done flips and larger syndication deals. But, you know, I think house hacking is a really great way to accelerate your path to financial independence.
I completely agree with that. And I think as you stated, you know, it, especially when you were a young person, when you bought these house hacks, it was not only was it helping you pay your mortgage, but you were able to either live free or for relatively cheap. And as a young person or any person really, I like living cheap. Like I don't like spending a ton of money to live in a place. Right. So it's an awesome opportunity if you can get into it, if you, you know, wherever you live, if you're into duplexes or triplexes or whatever that looks like. I think it's an incredible thing. So how did you actually get your wife on board with the house hacking thing? Or was she kind of already okay with it when you guys
dating? No, not at all. So luckily we had, you know, we had met in Iowa. She was living in Minnesota. I was from North Carolina, but traveling all around the world. So we were not quite dating, but, you know, if I was ever in Minneapolis for work, we would get together and have dinner and spend some time together. And then she was really big travel buff. So if she was in Central America or South America, you know, and I was in the Caribbean for a disaster, I would take my break and go meet up with her. Like one time we met up and spent a week and a half in Chile and 2 weeks in Argentina. So at that time, like we had these different schedules and she knew I was building this real estate thing. And then when we got a little more serious and said, let's actually really date and think about building a life together, she moved to North Carolina. So she was, while we were dating, I was building up this really large portfolio. She knew tenants were calling me late at night for maintenance requests. And I convinced her to help paint and do flooring and hang cabinets and help me on some of my deals. So she, real estate wasn't her thing, but she was being supportive of me. And when we moved to New Orleans, I said, you know, let's do this house hack. Let me explain really what this is. You know, I like cheap housing or no housing. Would you consider doing this? And she essentially said, no, I don't like the type of places you live in. If we're going to buy a property, I want it to be a traditional home, what everyone thinks about. We sort of went back and forth and I said, you know, well, what do you really need? What's the minimum? And I sort of laid out this idea of like, you know, we're getting really serious. We're going to be moving in together. You know, here's what it can do for our financial future. And that really just sort of clicked for her. And she said, okay, I'm willing to jump on board. But she listed out some must-haves. Like she wanted a farmhouse sink. She wanted a deep soaker tub. So we did this sort of Burr house hack combo where we bought this 1920s corner store that we gutted to the studs and turned into 3 high-end apartments. And we lived in one apartment and rented out the other two. And those covered almost all of our mortgage, taxes, and insurance. And we had this guest house that family and friends could stay in. So it was just this really I knew what she wanted, and I went out and used my real estate sort of savviness that I built up to find this sort of perfect multifamily project. We had a little fenced-in courtyard for our dog. She got her 70-gallon soaker jacuzzi tub. We got her farmhouse sink, you know, original, you know, almost 100-year hardwood floors that were restored. So she had all of the creature comforts and things that she wanted. Then from my side, we knew it worked out really financially well for us, where, you know, for the past 3 years, we've essentially had zero housing costs. And most years with our house hack, we've made, you know, $4,000 to $7,000-$8,000 a year on it. So it was a struggle at first, lots of fights, lots of conflict. You know, she had a I'm building a home mentality, and I had a I'm building an investment mentality. And that caused a lot of, you know, butting of heads and, you know, restless nights, I guess is a good way to put it. But now she's on board. And obviously, we just bought another property that's a house hack together. So she's on board with doing house hacks. I still buy real estate on my own, which she's not quite on board with that part yet.
That's wives for you. No, I'm just teasing. But that's really cool, though, that she finally was like, yeah, okay, but I still want these things. It's compromise, right? That's what marriage is. So you mentioned right in the middle of kind of when you were talking about this, how real estate is a great way to reach financial independence. So can you talk a little bit about that? And I know you're trying to reach financial independence through real estate. So talk a little bit about that and how you've been able to get your wife on board with that too, and how you found out about the financial independence, I guess, movement. So if you want to talk a little bit about that and share with our audience.
Yeah. So while I was working in the nonprofit sector, you know, I started doing the real estate investing to build long-term wealth. I didn't really have this idea of, hey, I could replace my income. I really liked working in the nonprofit sector. And as I started building up this real estate stuff, I realized at one point, I was like, oh my goodness, I'm making more from my real estate investing part-time than I am from the nonprofit work. I still want to do the nonprofit work. And I set out to reach this really big goal of raising $25 million for charity. I'm pretty much mostly on the fundraising business development side in the nonprofit sector. So that's a goal I'm towards. I think I'm at like 17, 18 million towards that big goal. And then I'll reevaluate. But you know, while I was building this real estate investing and I started building longer term wealth, you know, I lived off the nonprofit salary and I just kept reinvesting. And it dawned on me one day of like, I'm making really good money here. And at the same time, I had read a Mr. Money Mustache article about early retirement. And that's when it just sort of dawned on me where, hey, I can make it so I could be financially independent with real estate investing. And that would let me then focus full time on the nonprofit work and not have to worry about the nonprofit salary. And I could go and work for a small nonprofit that maybe couldn't pay me, and I could work for them for 6 to 12 months and help build them up. Or I could, you know, just keep working in the nonprofit field, which notoriously doesn't pay as well as the for-profit side. So that's really just sort of where it came about. And then I really liked a lot of Mr. Money Mustache, but I didn't like the extreme frugality side of it. I like traveling internationally. You know, I've been to, I think, 35 countries. My wife's been to a little over 40 countries. We travel. We like to travel business class. We do it now with rewards, credit card rewards, and travel hacking, so we can keep saving the money we make from real estate to reinvest. But then, you know, I started finding a lot of other bloggers that had this different idea of financial independence, Lean FIRE. And what my goal then became to was to really quickly get to Lean FIRE, which I got to in right at the end of 2016. And then I would keep doing nonprofit work till I hit my big lofty goal and build up my real estate and other income till I got to what would be the equivalent of Fat FIRE. So that's sort of my goal, where I'm at and how that sort of financial independence thing came about.
That's so awesome. And I'm with you. I mean, I'm about frugality and living below your means, but I also like to travel. I like to buy coffee sometimes, you know, all those things. But I think the heart of the financial independence movement is incredible. And it's so cool now that you're also doing that. So with that, I know you're launching something really neat in December. And by the time that this launches, it will have already been launched itself. So if you want to talk a little bit about that, I'm really excited for you. And then your website and everything else that you're doing too.
Yeah, my website is fibyrei.com. It's Achieving Financial Independence Through Real Estate Investing. So it's just a bunch of articles about my follies of real estate investing, the different house hacks I've done, the two different property fires I've had, how I've raised private money for real estate investing deals, essentially how I've been using real estate investing to let me work in a nonprofit sector without having to worry about money. And then what really grew out of that was just recently relaunching the website here in December. And part of that is launching a podcast specifically on house hacking. You know, there's tons of great podcasts on financial independence, budgeting. There's tons about real estate investing as a whole. I really didn't find one out there that was dedicated just to house hacking. And I had so many of my friends come up to me and say, Andrew, we know there's this house hacking thing you've been doing that you always tell us about and how you don't have to pay for housing. We're spending a third of our budget or more on it. You know, how do you do that? So after sitting down with people for coffee and lunch and explaining it and hearing all the different excuses of, oh, well, you know, you did it when you're single, we can't do it. Or, you know, I'm not married, I'd have to be married to have the extra income to do it. Or we've got a family. I just said, why don't I do a podcast specifically on house hacking and present all these different case studies about the six different sort of styles of house hacking with all these different scenarios, a single guy, a single girl, couples, families with young kids, with old kids. That way people had all these case studies they can reference and we can walk them through it. So the website's just relaunched and then the podcast launches on December 30th, which I'm really, really excited about.
I'm really excited for you because you're right. There's not really anything out there dedicated specifically to house hacking. And I think it's such a great way to get into real estate investing, or if that's what you want to do forever, that's such a great way too. So thank you so much for sharing that. I'm really, really excited about that. We're going to link to the show in the show notes and your blog and your website and everything like that. So is there anything else that you wanted to leave with the audience before we ended today?
Yeah. One last thing is really with just the house hacking podcast is we're gearing it. If you want to dip your toe into real estate investing, house hacking is a great way to start. But one of the things I didn't like about other real estate podcasts and blogs is it was really geared towards folks that want to jump into real estate investing and go all in with it. And I've met so many folks in the personal finance space, the financial independence fire space, where they say, you know, real estate investing sounds interesting, but it's not for me, but I would maybe do this house hacking thing just to reduce my housing costs. So that's really what we're trying to gear the podcast for, is folks that, if you want to get into real estate investing, you can learn about house hacking and it's a great start. But if you have no desire to be a real estate investor and own dozens of properties, but you just want to reduce or completely eliminate your biggest budget item, it's a great, great tool for you to learn.
That's awesome. That makes it even 500 times better, because the reality is not everyone is interested in real estate investing, but I think we all mostly would be like, hey, if I could live for free, I'm down for that. So thanks for sharing that. Andrew, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your heart and a lot about yourself. Actually, thank you for being open. And then of course, sharing about real estate investing and house hacking and all of that. So I really appreciate you being on the show today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Faith in Finance podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please rate, review, and subscribe and share with a friend. I love hearing from you guys. Also, you can sign up for my newsletter at faithinfinance.org. Keep the faith, my friend.